1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. A vigil tonight in Tel Aviv's main square for family members of the Israelis Hamas took hostage October 7th. They're expected to release some hostages in a few hours. When a ceasefire takes effect, Elay David's brother is not part of that deal.
I still fear for his life. And we know nothing about him, about his medical situation and so on.
The deal also calls for Israel to release some Palestinian prisoners. Hamas says areas of Gaza will receive medical supplies. In eastern Kentucky, officials say they have put out a chemical fire burning at the site of a train derailment.
Throughout this entire event, the safety of the public has been our number one concern.
Dustin Heiser with Kentucky's Emergency Management says they have lifted the evacuation order. Rainbow Bridge connecting the U.S. and Canada at Niagara Falls has reopened a day after a car crashed and exploded in flames, killing two people inside. This is ABC News. Britain's new foreign secretary is on his own Mideast tour.
First stop for former prime minister and now the UK's top diplomat, David Cameron, southern Israel.
I wanted to come here myself to see the horrific nature of the attacks that you suffered.
As to the delayed hostages for prisoners swap.
We hope to see this humanitarian pause. I think that's important because it's an opportunity to get hostages out and to get aid in. And I hope and would urge everyone who's involved in that agreement to make sure that it happens.
Qatari officials involved in brokering the deal call this latest delay just a hiccup. Tom Rivers, ABC News at the Foreign Desk.
About 200 wild horses roam free in western North Dakota's National Park. Next year, the National Park Service must decide if they want to eliminate that population. France's military will add 15,000 soldiers to the Paris Olympic security. Andy Field, ABC News.
You probably heard the quote, friends are family you choose. It's also the idea behind the other Thanksgiving holiday, Friendsgiving. Some credit shows like Friends for starting this trend by featuring a day meant to celebrate with those who aren't your relatives. And when to gather is up to you. Many celebrate just before Thanksgiving, while others wait until after the official holiday. However you celebrate, all of us with your local Civic Media radio station wish you a wonderful holiday season. I'm Terry Barr. The Green Bay Packers call Lambeau Field home, but did you know the stadium has a history all its own? It started with where to build it. Residents on both sides of the city wanted it. Officials argued there had to be room for growth. Eventually, farmland was purchased, but in Ashwaubenon. The bargaining continued, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Green Bay City Stadium became a reality the following year and was renamed in honor of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau in 1965. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The gun deer season in Wisconsin is heading into its final weekend. A proposed bill in the state legislature aims to curb the spread of chronic wasting disease. Democratic Representative Katrina Shankland is proposing $2 million for carcass disposal sites and $100,000 to teach hunters about the brain wasting disease and why it's important to dispose of carcasses properly. Today's a big day in Greendale. The high school band is marching in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. The Greendale Band is one of just six high school bands from around the country to have the honor this year. It's the second time the Marching Panthers are appearing in the Macy's Parade. The last time was in 2016. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers beat the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers with a 29-22 win over the Lions. Detroit now 0-7 at home here on Thanksgiving Day. The game starting off with a deep pass from Jordan Love to Christian Watson for 53 yards, setting up the Packers' first touchdown.
Something we put in this week that, you know, we thought was going to work, and we were confident in it, and came out, you know, obviously put the ball up there, and Christian went up there and made a great catch.
Head coach Matt LaFleur said he almost canceled that play.
It was one of those deals. Matter of fact, I almost changed that first play call. I was kind of mulling it over quite a bit, and I texted Jordan this morning and told him I was going to change it to something else, and he said he wanted this call, so I said okay.
I asked Watson if he knew that play was almost canceled. Instead, he says he has to take the pressure off his quarterback.
When stuff isn't going our way as a team and it's all getting thrown on Jordan, I'm trying to find ways to take that off of him.
With sports from Ford Field in Detroit, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refreshed.
Here's your updated forecast. 13 tonight under clear skies. Winds out of the northwest. 8 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high of 29. 17 tomorrow night. Cloudy. About an inch of snow Sunday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 22.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed. Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
Yo.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, we come to you from Sioux City, Iowa, all the way down from Minneapolis to Sioux City overnight, and very long ride. Lots of miles in between, but beautiful country. But I want to start off, being here in Sioux City, looking at this most recent Labor Department Consumer Price Index report that just came out. And it's one of these things that we keep hearing about inflation and how inflation's killing everybody. And well, of course, it's all Joe Biden's fault. It's all the Democrats' fault. It's their fault. What this latest Labor Department CPI report points out and really makes crystal clear is what we've been talking about for months now. The major driver of inflation is not Joe Biden. It's not the $1,400 that people got. It's not the investments in infrastructure. It's not the reshoring of manufacturing. It's pure and simple corporate greed. It's Wall Street gouging us and badly. It's mass consolidation. It's monopolization. It's corporate America having such incredible power. And I would argue way too much power in both parties. They completely control the Republican Party and a good portion of the Democrats. And this is why in this moment, we should really be focusing on making sure that, this is addressed. I know all the other issues are important, but it's the economy, stupid. It's that simple. But according to this most recent analysis from government watchdog group Accountable.us, they point out that the big corporations, the big boys, the top corporations in the country, they raise their prices on the things that we need every day, the necessities that we need every day. And you go, well, they had to because, those workers, those evil workers demanding, something. And the reality is the prices went up much faster than wages did. So sorry, not buying it. What did go up, corporations raising prices, things like food, shelter, utilities, the things that everyone needs. But you look at the companies that provide that stuff. They're raking in what are just record, major high price profit margins. They are lining their pockets like never before, and they've got near record operating margins. So they're making huge money, and they're keeping that those labor costs out. Even though people are asking and getting, some raises, it's nowhere near what they should be getting. But like I said, these corporations have just raked in massive profits. And if you've listened to the program before, we had some folks on from the Groundwork Collaborative, and they were the ones who were, taking time to listen to the earnings calls and these CEOs reporting back to their shareholders. It's the rich people talking to themselves and figuring out how to gouge us, the little people. And how do they do that? Well, massive increases in prices so they can line their pockets. And wealthy investors have done really well. They've reaped billions of dollars in dividends. Now, like I said, these companies that the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, looks at, the major categories like food, energy, healthcare, shelter, that kind of stuff. What they point out at accountable.us is that these companies have raised prices while making what was something like $6 billion in profits, more than they made last year. So when you look at year after year over year, they're $6 billion ahead of where they were last year. At the same time, they've increased their spending on, you know, handouts to their shareholders by $15.4 billion over last year, totaling $62.6 billion in massive redistribution of wealth from you and your family and the prices that you pay to our investor class. Because you know what? They need a little more. Their children need a little cheese on their Whopper. I go back to, you know, one of the most disgraceful things that we see. You know, you look at these stock buyback schemes. You know, we give these companies huge tax breaks. We give them, you know, everything they could possibly want. And yet, does it trickle down to us? No. All they do is they pocket the profits and they share it amongst themselves, never to trickle down to you and me. And what we keep hearing, it's Joe Biden's fault. That's all the cons keep telling us. It's Biden's fault. It's all Joe Biden. It's Joe Biden. You know, one, never mind the rest of the world is having massive inflation problems as well. Never mind that. It's Joe Biden. It's the investments in infrastructure. It's the investments in the Inflation Reduction Act. It's all that stuff. And yet this latest CPI report comes as the Inflation Reduction Act hasn't taken really effect yet. So you can't see that anything's been done yet. Now understand what the IRA was, what the Inflation Reduction Act was hopefully going to do and still will do, is to try and rein in that corporate profiteering. Now I keep calling for where's today's Harry Truman? Where are those commissions to look at price gouging and profiteering? But remember, the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, no Republicans voted for. They voted against reining in the abuses of drug companies and the profiteers. They voted against investing in our infrastructure, but blame those things as that's why we have inflation, because Joe Biden is investing in the country. Now, the weird thing is, it doesn't stop them from taking credit for the things that they voted against. And I look at Elise Stefanik, a Republican representative, who is evidently out running around touting this $12.9 million investment into rural hospitals in her district, even though she didn't vote for the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, the rescue package, didn't vote for any of it, voted against all of that. She's taking credit for it. Now, I love the press release that her people put out. Because they put out this thing that says this significant investment will bolster rural hospitals in upstate New York and the North Country after lost revenues due to the coronavirus pandemic, help address the physician shortage, and ensure these hospitals can continue to meet our community's healthcare needs. She's saying, look what I've done. Look how wonderful I am. But yet didn't vote for it. Said it was a far left wish list, which is why she voted against it. Now, a spokesperson responded to Politico basically saying she voted against Pelosi's radical spending, you know, on hospitals that her district are going to benefit from because of the far left provisions. So you got this, there's a spending in there I didn't like, but I'm going to take the good spending that I voted against and take credit for it. You didn't vote for it. And this is one of those things where you just kind of shake your head and go, when will voters wake up to the reality that these people really don't care about their districts? They don't really care about the people in them. It's all just a game to them. And we're in this moment. I'm hoping voters are paying attention because, you know, while we're here in Sioux City, I've been talking with people here who seem to get the message that, you know, how mass consolidation, how bad trade deals, how corporate greed is destroying the working class, and how this division on how our Republican friends, you know, because they have to obstruct because they bought the red hat and the blue hat guys in the office. That they have to block and gridlock and delay everything. And this is one of those moments where I'm hoping people are paying attention because guess what? We're all going to struggle. We're all going to sink if things go the way, well, the way some of our Republican friends seem to want it to go, which is why I'm kind of frustrated about where we are in this moment. But we can make the difference. And that means we have to, vote. Maybe we think about that. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day that John D. Rockefeller and his company Standard Oil struck a deal with the Pennsylvania Railroad that would cement his monopoly on the nation's oil refineries. In the early 1870s, Rockefeller was building his oil empire out from its center in Cleveland, Ohio. In October of 1877, the nation went through a great upheaval, a popular uprising of a quarter of a million railroad workers and their allies. The uprising had only ended after a series of bloody skirmishes in rail centers across the country that saw 100 workers killed. The Pennsylvania Railroad had lost $3 million in destroyed property. Recognizing the railroad was in trouble, Rockefeller decided to capitalize on the opportunity. The railroad had just entered into a partnership with one of Rockefeller's competitors, the Empire Transport Company, earlier that year. The strike had weakened both partners. Rockefeller was able to purchase Empire's assets far below their actual value. For example, he purchased an Empire oil refinery in Pennsylvania for $500,000. Within 4 years, that refinery had earned Rockefeller three times that amount. But the most important part of the deal was that Rockefeller could ship his oil on the Pennsylvania Railroad so cheaply that he could drive out his remaining competition. Standard Oil was shipped on rail for 8 cents a barrel. Other companies had to pay more than $1.44. By the 1890s, Rockefeller's refineries handled 90% of the nation's oil. His ruthless efforts to drive out competition made Rockefeller increasingly unpopular with the public and the target of anti-monopoly reformers. In addition, Rockefeller and his company became increasingly notorious for their heavy-handed anti-labor practices, most infamously for the Ludlow Massacre of 1914.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
This is the best of The Rick Smith Show.
So as I've been saying, my grandparents' generation, the greatest generation, they fought World War II, they fought fascism overseas, and when they came home, they fought and built the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. Yes, you could have a family get by on one income, and they could make, well, they could pay for their kids' college. They could take vacations. The little white picket fence. You know, the American dream we were told was possible. I tell people that one income could do that. Nobody seems to believe me. We, at one point, had a very strong, prosperous working class. And here to share some thoughts on maybe what that was like and maybe how we get back to that, I've asked John Hamm to come talk with us. John is retired. John is the retired president of the Western Iowa Labor Federation. And retired, something that many of us may never get to. But John, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we hear this story all the time that, you know, the years past, it was this Norman Rockwell kind of Leave It to Beaver era where things were wonderful. You know, mom was at home, you know, making pie, and dad went off to work and worked 8 hours, and life was good. And I don't think many people think that that was ever a possibility.
Oh, it definitely was a possibility. When I grew up, working man could go out and he made enough money on one job, working here in Sioux City at Sioux Tools and the packing houses, working for Swifts, Armors, Cuddays, Windcharger, those kind of jobs that we had back then. One person worked, the mother stayed home and took care of their kids and took care of the house. And that's really difficult to try and do that today.
Yeah, I know. My wife and I, when we had children, said someone had to stay home. I was hoping it was going to be me, but she didn't make enough. She didn't have a union job. My union job has afforded me the ability to make sure that my kids get to have someone at home when they come home from school. And that's a rarity in today's economy. And it's something I think we should be able to get back to it with smart policy, with smart investments. So walk me through some of this, because a lot of people are listening, John, and going, yeah, that's not possible. You know, how did that happen here? Because you said that when we were talking before that this was a union city. When I think of Iowa now, I don't think, you know, strong union now.
Sioux City was a very strong union city when I was young. We had all of the packing houses that were here in this city. Those were all union jobs. And like I said earlier, Sioux Tools, a big manufacturing company here, all union jobs. Windcharger, all union jobs, manufacturing. Zenith Corporation used to have a plant here.
So what happened?
Most of the jobs went overseas.
And when did that happen? Is this NAFTA that did this? Is this Ronald Reagan's high dollar policy and assaults on labor? Is this even further back when, you know, into the Nixon, you know, Carter years? You know, when did this start to happen?
I think the real decline happened when Ronald Reagan became president of the United States. Things started moving out of town. And we've never been able to bring those kind of jobs back. We still have a good union group of people here. We've still got packing houses and we've got a lot of union building trades people and those jobs are here, but not in the numbers of what they used to be.
And not at the wages that you remember. I mean, I remember when I started back in the mid to late 80s, you know, my standard of living back then was much higher than it is now because wages have been stagnant and in many cases declining for people.
Well, truly, if people pay attention, working men and women in this country have not got a pay raise since 1972, if you really look at the numbers. We have been losing ground since 1972 on the paycheck.
And why is that? Is there something that you can point to, go, this was the policy choice, or was this just, you know, 1971, Lewis Powell writes a memo that says, hey, this is how we save free enterprise by breaking unions and taking over education and media and all the corporate interests thrown in a statesman like some of 10% to break those unions. Is that part of it, you think?
Well, I would say that's a very big contributing part of it. I think most of it's just flat out corporate greed in our country, to be honest with you, myself. Big business wants everything and they don't seem to want the working class people to have anything.
And in fact, today, a new study by the folks at Accountable, a government watchdog group, put out the fact that, you know, we were told inflation's because of Joe Biden, or told inflation's because, you know, we spend too much because Biden gave us, you know, $1,400. That somehow, you know, spurred all this inflation. When the reality is, you look at the numbers, corporate profits are up, shareholders are fat and happy. I think that kind of plays into it.
Oh, definitely.
So how do we get back to the place that you remember? How do we get to a place where my kids and future generations, because look, I used to fight back on the frame that my grandparents' generation were the greatest generation. I say, no, every generation rises to the challenges of the day. That was my argument. But the older I get, the more I look back to what they built and what they accomplished and what they left for future generations, my mind is going, yeah, they probably were the greatest generation. What policies do you think, what things can we do to learn from what they did and move forward so our children have better opportunities?
Well, I think that people should be catching on after the COVID pandemic that we've had, and the fact that business couldn't get all their foreign-made junk into our country. That right there should be giving big business all kinds of incentive to be building back in our country.
Yeah, and, no, it's still greed for them. It's still the cheap labor, exploitable environmental regulations. It's like heroin to a CEO. Yeah. They've got to have it. And we're not, I hope we're not going to race to the bottom. And that's why I've been grateful to the Biden administration. Everything that they're talking about doing on infrastructure and funding for manufacturing has come with prevailing wage and language to ensure that those jobs are family-sustaining jobs. So I'm a little hopeful, but I have no hope in corporate America doing the right thing, because I know what their motive is. Their motive, and you know this, John, as a retired labor leader, it's about getting the most for themselves and the least for us, the working people, the people who actually create the wealth.
It's greed. It's with big business, that's the American way with them, is they want it all and leave nothing for the working people.
So, you know, in looking at where we are in this moment, and this is kind of where I want to wrap things up in this idea. You know, because you look at your life, which has been fascinating. I mean, the fact that, you know, you started off, you know, working in a grocery store, right?
Yes.
A union grocery store.
That's right.
Which is something almost unheard of. I mean, you know, you've got Kroger now, which is, you know, the sad reality is they don't pay the wages that they used to, because they have to compete with low road kind of Dollar General store kind of stores. But like you said, this was, everything was unionized, and back then everything was, so people competed on the right things, not who's willing to work for poverty wages. It seems to me that there's an answer here, and that is workers organizing and taking wages and benefits out of the equation.
Well, the best way, as you say, become a union member. If you got problems, your union is one of the best places to address those problems in the workplace. And if you want to get a pay raise, and a lot of people are not capable on their own of trying to negotiate their own deal.
Yeah, you mean I'm not going to make a good deal?
You need to be with a group of people. I learned as a little kid that we had to stick together or we was going to get beat up by the bully. And that's the same thing with work. The big business, the big bullies, you got to stand up to them, and you got to do it as a group of people. And a group of people, there's no place better than to join your local unions and get involved in your local unions and be part of that union and help support the union and make it go. And I think things will get a whole lot better for American workers.
I hope so. And I look at the younger generation and I have some hope, because I think they're internalizing what you just said, that message. And they look at what happened to their parents. They look at what's happened that coming out of this pandemic, and they're not putting up with it.
Well, they're the people that have got to step up and got to be involved, because it's their future. Myself personally, I would just like to express to the younger people out there that I am really enjoying being retired and being able to draw a union paycheck from my pension every month that supports me and my wife now.
Yeah. No, I talk about this with my grandparents. They lived a life of dignity. They started off, they were homeless. Back in the old days, if you know, mom got pregnant, everyone was basically ostracized, and they started off homeless and led a solidly middle class existence. They died in their homes with security and dignity. They weren't dependent on anyone, because they both had union pensions, and they both had Social Security, and they both had savings, and that three-legged stool that was created so that people could have a dignified existence in their golden years. That's been whittled down to maybe you were able to squirrel away a little something, but sad reality is they're destroying Social Security. They've eviscerated the defined benefit pension and savings. Good luck, because wages have been so depressed. This is why, again, back to what you said, people need to join and form unions.
Exactly right.
John Hamm, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Good talking with you. I'm going to take a quick break. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. Do you see in this moment, do you see the organizing happening? I want to hear it. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back here from Sioux City, Iowa. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. A vigil tonight in Tel Aviv's main square for family members of the Israelis Hamas took hostage October 7th. They're expected to release some hostages in a few hours. When a ceasefire takes effect, Elay David's brother is not part of that deal.
I still fear for his life, and we know nothing about him, about his medical situation and so on.
The deal also calls for Israel to release some Palestinian prisoners. Hamas says areas of Gaza will receive medical supplies. In eastern Kentucky, officials say they have put out a chemical fire burning at the site of a train derailment.
Throughout this entire event, the safety of the public has been our number one concern.
Dustin Heiser with Kentucky's Emergency Management says they have lifted the evacuation order. Rainbow Bridge connecting the U.S. and Canada at Niagara Falls has reopened a day after a car crashed and exploded in flames, killing two people inside. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A fugitive is now formally charged with the death of his 12-year-old son, whose decomposing body was found in a home in Milwaukee last month. The Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office filed reckless homicide charges this week against Romuan Moy. No one is sure exactly when Jackery Robinson died or how. Meanwhile, Moy is on the run and there's a warrant out for his arrest. Prosecutors in Wisconsin may Sunday get more time to file sexual assault charges. Republican Senator Andre Jacques is introducing a bill to extend the statute of limitations for sex crimes in Wisconsin from 10 years to 20. Jacques says prosecutors in other states have 20 years to press sexual assault charges. A similar bill passed the state Senate last year but stalled in the Assembly. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Chris from Middleton. Welcome to the show. What do you got for us?
I'm a Democrat. I totally agree that there's been too much corporate influence probably in the Democratic Party. I liked how Bernie talked about economic issues, and I agree we need more of that. But I don't think we can also afford to shy away from the identity politics. In fact, we got to lean into the identity politics and not be shy about it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. 13 tonight under clear skies, winds out of the northwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high of 29. 17 tomorrow night, cloudy. About an inch of snow Sunday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 21.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I'm not even clear from conflicting headlines whether or not Robin Voss has the cojones to move forward with impeachment against Megan Mullen. Why would he do such a thing? You know, just a couple of weeks after he said he wasn't going to do such a thing. Well, he's been threatened, huh? By what? A group headed by his primary opponent, Adam Steed.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
In touch with the City of Lakes. In touch with you. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
Journalism, but of absentee corporate owners plundering journalism.
This is the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So here we are in Sioux City, Iowa, and what a beautiful place. The drive you know, I got to tell you, flat, where I'm from in Pennsylvania, a lot more hilly. I like the flat. But what a beautiful area. I mean, the farmlands, all the things that we've been able to see, the people that we've met here have just been fantastic. And again, thanks to J.D. Scholten for helping us set all this up. I think he's going to make a fantastic state representative. Love to see him in Congress one day. But I'm sitting here with Craig Levine. Craig is the membership development director for the IBEW here locally. He's also the president of the Northwest Iowa Building Trades, also the vice president of the Western Iowa Labor Federation. I'm sure there's a bunch of other titles, but those are pretty good ones. But Craig, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So, you know, we're doing this tour. We're going around. We're talking to people about and sharing, you know, the communities that they live in. So tell me about Sioux City.
Well, it has a lot of manufacturing in it. I'm very active with the construction part of it. We're swamped. We're busy. We don't have enough people, enough trained people to go around.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. And we've been hearing that a lot everywhere we go. There aren't enough skilled trade people. And I remember when I was a kid, and that's been a while, you know, out of high school looking for, you know, what am I going to do? I wanted to get into the building trades, and there was no way for love or money. I was getting into an apprenticeship program back then. But I keep hearing people saying, we just can't find people. Why is that?
I think a lot of it has to do in the last 20-some years, people have been saying a four-year degree. And there's not everybody is a four-year degree person, I myself included. I got in the trade in my mid-30s. I've worked myself up. I have a good job, and I'm able to provide for my family. Very proud of that.
Yep.
But I've also gone out. We have a state licensing list and looking for people. I've been out visiting electricians off that licensing list. This summer, I visited about 300 people in the 26 counties in this area. And a lot of them have retired now. And, you know, there's a lot of them. They're very hard to find a licensed electrician under 35.
Yeah, I mean, I see the same things. We got away from it, and now we need to get back to it. But a part of it is, I think we've changed what work is and the dignity of work, and
yes.
The idea of, you know, working with your hands somehow became a nasty thing. And look, I've been a truck driver most of my working life, and look, I was just telling somebody before, I have as much dignity and respect in the job that I do as anyone should, and I think we've diminished our own self-worth in a way that has been very harmful, I think.
I agree with you. And I learned very early on, you respect anybody who's working. You know, before this, I was a convenience store manager, and I had people there. You know, if you just come in and, you know, I met all walks of life, and I enjoyed it. And just different people have different challenges, and yeah. Not everybody's going to be huge. And it's just always nice to respect them, enjoy them, and talk to them.
Now, I had someone, you know, tell me that Sioux City was the ultimate, the quintessential Leave It to Beaver kind of Mayberry community, but you've kind of fallen on some hard times. Has that been your experience?
I can see that. My parents worked at the packing houses in the 70s and the early 80s, and at that time, it was a very good paying job. And it's really frustrating that in the 30 years, 40 years since then, they're not getting paid a whole lot more. And it's kind of went down as they looked down on the people, and there's nothing wrong with having an honest living.
No, and
but the companies was able to break the unions a lot, the stronghold of the unions. The contracts every 3 years. Well, every 3 years they're on about a year long strike, because that's when the plants would do some major improvements, and they wouldn't negotiate in good faith.
And this is, again, you know, I go back to this moment, and I go back to 2016. And I think the one thing that Donald Trump hit on with a lot of people, and look, there's the racism, there's the homophobia, the misogyny, there's all of that stuff. But I think the one thing that he accurately hit on is the fact that people pine for those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I don't think people want to go back into the packing houses or work in factories or, you know, work in steel mills like they did in the past. Those are dangerous, dirty jobs. And I think what they pine for is the fact that those were union jobs. And those union jobs afforded people the kind of security that I talk about all the time in both work, in life, and in health. It's the kind of thing that I think people are pining for. And I'm curious your thoughts, because, you know, when I look at this this environment we're in, we're divided. We're pitted against each other on every front, whether you bought the red hat or the blue hat. I think the labor movement is where we unite people to say, look, your work should be rewarded. You should have the dignity of a decent wage, the dignity of health security, so that if your son, like mine, had his appendix burst, you don't have to worry about what if you're going to go broke getting him the care you need. I think this is where we unite people, Craig.
I agree with you. I mean, that's the part about it is that just the dignity, you know, trying to respect people. And I don't really care where your other things are. Just the vocal, the labor issues, what's more important. And I don't, I believe that, you know, gun rights, I understand that. But you also have to be realistic on it. But that they use it as a dividing deal for it. You know, you have to be able to buy an AK-47. No, you don't need to buy an AK-47. You need to just, legitimate, they use that as a distraction. Watch this hand. Stop paying attention to this hand.
Yeah, that other one we're not watching is robbing us blind. And
exactly.
I keep coming back to this because in that moment, the anger that Trump was able to tap into, and again, the racism, the homophobia, the misogyny, all of that stuff, very accurate. But for a large number of people, it was that we're going to recreate this opportunity of the past, this you know, ability to lead a dignified, secure lifestyle. And this is where, again, I come back to, we can do this, because some of the people that I've talked to here have said, look, like you just said, they've broken down the unions. They've broken these jobs down. People are working harder and longer for less. In fact, you know, it used to be one income would support a family. Mm-hmm. Now people got 2-3 jobs and they're still not getting by. That's got to change.
We had a organizing campaign at one of the manufacturers in town. And it amazed me that, they approached us as about right around 400 people in the plant. And the things that they were going through, just, I got so comfortable with my union jobs, I didn't realize the struggle that you almost get a load of stats. It was eye-opening. I appreciated it. But they were saying they couldn't afford raises for these people, but yet they had the union busting company over there and all their stuff's online, the LM-20s that they have to fill out. And it shows that they're paying $600 an hour with a six-hour minimum to tell these people how greedy the union are. You know, and it just appalled, but they have these captive audience meetings, and that's what the difference between a Trump administration and Biden is, that we lost that election because once a week they had to go into mandatory one-hour meetings to talk about they're trying to say fair and balanced, but, you know, the very one-sided conversation about how bad unions are, they felt. And they shortly after this, the NLRB wanted to start eliminating captive audience meetings.
And they should.
And they should. But the Trump administration had opened up the doors so they can do whatever they wanted with them.
No, it's crazy. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Craig Levine. He is the Membership Development Director of the IBEW here in Sioux City, Iowa. Also the President of the Northwest Iowa Building Trades, Vice President of the Western Iowa Labor Federation. You got a lot of titles.
I can't say no, and I volunteer.
You're a busy, busy man. But as the membership director, or what we used to call back in the old days, organizers, you're the person who goes, reaches out and talks to people about these things. Do you get the sense that they understand that unions are the way we move forward, the way we pull people together, or have unions been so,
victimized?
I was thinking of a word, but it's a swear word, and it's, yeah, FCC. And have they been so attacked and so diminished in messaging that people don't see them as the way forward? Or
I agree with you, because I mean, like I said, I've visited a lot of electricians this year, and some of them have trouble understanding. They've been dinked over for so long that they think that's all they have. And they don't understand that, well, you know, you have this and stuff. What about the working assessments? Okay, well, how much are you paying for an insurance? Well, if you can work for us, a contractor pays the insurance. How much is that a month? How much is that a week? You try to explain that to them, and they have trouble believing it because it's just such a foreign concept to them to have benefits. A couple of years ago, I talked to the guy up in this very rich area, the Iowa Lakes region, and he had been with the company 21 years, made $21 an hour, zero benefits.
Wow.
And our scale is $36.77 plus about $12 in benefits. And you know, he couldn't comprehend that.
And the thing is you go, if you're a working person, you should be running to that. And it's not surprising that employers spend so much money to deny workers their rights. And I go back to something my grandfather always said. If a rich guy's going to pull a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. And the return on the investment for these union busting companies is, well, more for them, less for you.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And they talk about how greedy you are. And it's like, how much did you get paid today? A lot more than me.
No, I love there's one of these memes that went around where, you know, there's 10 cookies on a plate, and the boss took 9 of them and told the worker, hey, you better watch out. That guy's going to take your cookie.
I've seen that meme, yeah, since I...
But that's accurate. I mean, it's the world that we're in. And I, look, I go back to, you know, Trump and the vision that the fantasy that he kind of created for people. He had no way of recreating that era. He had no policies that were going to do any of these things. But like a good TV guy, you know, he spun a good story. And this is where, for me, we take this moment, because it's an important one, and we move forward and we actually do make people's lives better. Mm-hmm. For me, again, that's my true north. How do we make people's lives better? And I think what you do is important, because it does. As a kid growing up in the projects, when we saw somebody in our neighborhood get a union job, their lives got better. Union job, better life. They had food at the end of the month. Their lives got better. And I think that message has to be told more and more often.
You know, I agree with you 100%, because, I mean, I got on the trade in my mid-30s. Place I worked at closed up. The opportunity was there. I kind of took it. I was a dislocated worker, was able to go back to school. And I look at what my difference in my I've been married for 20-some years. Too long is the wrong answer, but anyway. And I have a great wife. But I have 3 great kids. But I look at, you know, the same year I got in the apprenticeships, the same year I adopted our 3 kids. And I look at the life that they were able to have because of the union job. It's made a difference.
Yep. And this, for me, this is where I think the Biden administration is doing the absolute right thing.
I do too.
We're investing in infrastructure.
Yes.
Massive infrastructure. I wish it was more, but $1.2 trillion, not a bad start, even though the Society of Civil Engineers says it should be $4.8 trillion. $1.8 is a good start. The infrastructure bill there, where we're talking about restoring manufacturing, the CHIPS bill, going to start building some stuff.
Yes.
Can we argue whether the subsidies are too much? Yeah, not in this moment for me. We got to get things back here. And also the other part, the main part for me, making sure those are union jobs, talking about strengthening unions, or as what I call the secret sauce, infrastructure, manufacturing, and unions. That's the secret sauce of the greatest generation.
I agree, and Biden has not been afraid to say his union. He's always pulled that out. He's very proud to be that area, and he makes, you know, the difference of it. And it amazed me that Trump knew how to promise a dream. Manipulate, very good deal, you know. And it amazes me how many people he cannot pay, and people still stand in line to work for him.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I guess here's the thing. We're both union guys.
Yes.
I can honestly say I have never been cheated out of a dime by an employer.
No. Not.
They've tried. They've tried.
And that's why we file the grievances and we go through the procedures.
That's it. File a grievance, you get paid. Most people are used to being cheated.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea of, you know, working for an employer and them cheating you isn't that far of a concept. For you and I, there's no way we would stand for that.
You know, yeah, and exactly. You know, and like I said, people just want to work, and that's what Trump tried to sell them on it, and they weren't able to fact check him. But people want to work 40 hours a week. They want to have, you know, go on a vacation off and on. They want to go to little kids' Little League games, you know, and occasional dinner and movie on a Friday night with the wife.
Yep. The idea.
That's not extravagant.
No, the idea of I want to I want to work to live. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to live to work.
No.
This idea that what my labor does can support my lifestyle and support my children and give them opportunities that I didn't have. That's the American dream. And when I tell people, especially younger people, that we used to have jobs that could support an entire family.
Yes, and have a new car every 5 years and go on vacation.
They don't believe me.
No.
But there are policy decisions we can make that can recreate that. Tax policy, trade policy, investment policy. We can do those things because we've done it in the past.
I agree. And it's kind of, and Trump had a way of manipulating people. I mean, one of the tours he came through here, and I went to go see him just to he's running for president. You want to see what he has to say. And it amazed me the people that were falling for it. And he was saying things like, you know, I just donated X amount of dollars to the vets around here because he got trouble saying something about the vets. So he paid it this way. And he says, well, I heard that a turbine factory or manufacturer was going to go down. So Maytag was having some problems. And so I made sure all my hotels order everything from Maytag because I knew that was important to support them, the communities. And then the Domino's pizza, I know if the Maytag fell, the Domino's would do it. So I bought the cheese I placed for 3 months, whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, and people were just buying it, but I'm going, I don't believe a word you're saying.
But that's the thing. I'm used to seeing it on TV. It's a good story. You know?
It's a good story. TV
always has a good positive ending at the end. And look, to be honest, be completely honest with you, Craig, I wanted him to succeed.
Yeah.
I wanted him to bring back manufacturing. I wanted him to recreate that prosperity of the past for working people. I did. I was happy when he renegotiated the NAFTA trade agreement. There were some good things there.
Yes.
But for the most part, it was all three-card Monty.
It was exactly. Watch this hand. Don't pay any attention to this one.
So last question I've got for you. Okay. You know, and you're talking to a young person. You know, what's the pitch?
I just point out to him the opportunities. I said, you know, that you can go to a five-year apprenticeship. You'll make about 70 grand at the end of the year. And by the time you have no student loan debts, you work for a contractor for 5 years, you're fine. And if we go to a college, there's, you know, not as much demand in that at some of them areas.
70 grand. They hire an old guys?
That's just it. We had 36, 77, 40 hours a week. You make decent money.
Yeah, no, I may be signing up.
Okay. I have my card right there.
I got it right here. And if you want more information, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Craig Levine, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
No problem. Anytime. Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I was checking out some of the poverty numbers here for the Sioux City, Iowa area, and what they point out is about 15% of the working age people here in Sioux City live below the federal poverty line. And you know, look, you look around and poverty may not be always visible, but it's reality. And when you've got about 15% of the residents living below the federal poverty line, that's kind of a problem, especially when you look at the fact that we've got this state turning what used to be a solidly Democratic state, a solid labor state. I mean, in this area, as we talked about a moment ago, a solid union town where everyone knew somebody who was making decent wages with health care and retirement security because they were part of a union where, in talking with John Hamm, it was the norm that everyone you knew was somewhere in the same world. And now we've got these, we're turning into a country that we've got the haves and then the rest of us. The rest of us struggling just to get by. And when you look at the fact that you've got poverty numbers as high as they are at a moment when the country's wealthier than it has ever been, it's a problem. Healthcare being one of the main drivers of our poverty situation. And I go back to my story. You know, look, I'm very fortunate and grateful that when my son had his illness, we didn't think about, is this going to make us go broke? All we cared about was, is he going to get better? How do we get the help that we need to ensure that he gets what he needs? It's not a matter of what it's going to cost or, are we going to be able to pay this bill or that? Are we going to pay the rent? Are we going to pay the utilities? Are we going to put food on the table? Nope, didn't think about it. Sadly, for far too many, the reality is fear. Now you get into the lower end of the economic scale, and you've got people who are struggling to pay the rent, struggling to keep the lights on, struggling to keep food on the table, which is why I think President Biden's plan to end childhood hunger in 8 years is long overdue, something that should have been done 50 years ago when I was a little kid. But finally, we're looking at these problems and we're looking at these things in a different way, which is why I think, look, going backwards in this moment, terrible. But I don't want to just worry about getting people just above the poverty line so that we can end this number. And I go back to what Craig Levine was talking about here a moment ago, talking about, you know, organizing, talking about getting people the skills and the jobs that need to be done, but that pay a living wage. I don't want people just to get by. I want people to do well. And these apprenticeship programs, and I'm going to go back to Craig Levine's comments of a moment ago. You know, getting people into these apprenticeship programs where they gain the skills that they need to do the things that we need as a society to get done. And, you know, like I said earlier, the reality is when I was younger, you couldn't get into those programs because they were so competitive. There were so many people who saw that as a pathway forward. And over these 30, 40 years, what has happened? Well, we've diminished the value of work. We look down on people who work with their hands. We look down on people who do what the menial jobs. And the reality is I don't care what you do for a living. I don't care if you're one of the people who are sitting on the couch punching away at the computer. It's work worth dignity. And, you know, in this moment, we really do need to be getting people the job skills that they need. I mean, I look at these poverty numbers and it's disgraceful. It's disgraceful in this time that we don't have the kind of employment that people can, you know, in talking with John Hamm a moment ago, that you can live a lifestyle on one income. I mean, you know, that Leave It to Beaver thing, and I know I've been talking about that a lot lately, but it's something to aspire to, that a family could get by on one income, that you could be family-centric. And I hear people talking about family values all the time, especially my friends on the right. They love talking about how much they love family values and they're pro-life and they're all of this stuff, but yet their policies, none of it matches. None of it matches the rhetoric. What all that stuff's meant to do is keep people stupid and marching in line, go, we're pro-life, we love the babies. But as soon as they pop out, as soon as the babies pop out, we don't give a rat's behind about them. Which is why, you know, again, I actually heard people attacking Joe Biden for the plan to end childhood hunger. They've attacked Joe Biden for being a decent father. I mean, while simultaneously saying, you know, fatherhood's under attack and motherhood's under attack by the liberals, they're attacking him for being a father and for caring about his kid. I mean, it's bizarre the world that we're in. But, you know, our friends on the right, everything that is up is actually down. It's all about the PR. It's all about the game. Where my mind is, it's how do we make lives better? In these apprenticeship programs, this is the way to make things better. And what I love, and again, this is, you know, during the Obama years, they passed the WIOA, the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, where they were going to, you know, make community college more accessible. They were going to make apprenticeship programs more accessible. And what you saw is a bunch of people going, well, how can we make these apprenticeship programs? How can we do this? And I was raising my hand, waving, going, we already have them. How about ensuring that we use them? How about we use the unions to train workers as they've been doing for 100 and some years, or from the beginning of time, actually, and use them to do what they do well, and that is train the next generation of workers to build the things that we need and do the work that needs to be done, and then use their labor. Oh my goodness, wouldn't that be an idea? To actually make it a federal mandate to go, you know what? We're going to use labor that came out of these apprenticeship programs. And I'm sorry, ABC contractors, if you don't use qualified apprentices, and that sham of a plan you've got doesn't produce good quality people, then you don't get these contracts. And make them competitive. But you're not going to hear the ABC folks wanting to jump into that game, because they know they lose. So for me, it comes down to a bunch of things. If we want to end poverty, the quickest way to do that is give people jobs. And if the private sector won't do it, the public sector has to. This is where I come back to, we need a jobs mandate in the public sector. Again, if the private sector won't or can't, more like won't, then the public sector has a responsibility to do it. We need to end childhood hunger as the president has laid out a plan to do. We need to end hunger. In the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest moment, no person should go hungry. We need to make sure that homeless people have access to a shelter. We need to make sure that, seniors can exist. You've got a Republican Party who is hell-bent on destroying Social Security and Medicare. In fact, they got a plan. They have a plan to do that. They want to sunset all federal programs in the next 5 years. What do you think that's going to do to Granny? Think Granny's going to be happy about that? Do you think Granny's going to be able to put food on the table? Do you think Granny's going to be able to keep a roof over her head? No, not so much. We got work to do, folks. That's simple. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to Lake Air.
WLAK 1260 AM Amory.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.